Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No! It's the Flight Free Podcast. One presenter. One special guest. One mission to save planet Earth. Will they succeed? Find out in this thrilling episode of the Flight Free Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Flight Free Podcast. Now, we've been talking a lot about travel recently, but this time we're going to be talking about those difficult decisions that might come up if you have chosen not to fly, but if you have family abroad, for example. So it's my great pleasure to introduce Philippa Robb to the Flight Free Podcast, a transport campaigner who works in low carbon active travel. So welcome, Philippa.
Hi.
Would you like to tell us a bit about your work and a bit about you?
Yes, so I work for a local authority in central London, Hammersmith and Fulham, and I am a smarter transport officer. So my job is literally to get people out of cars and onto other forms of transport, sustainable transport, so walking, cycling, scooting, wheeling, anything like that, just trying to get people out of cars. And before that, well, of course, I knew you as a cycling instructor, where we were in and out of schools delivering bikeability to school children, which, of course, we do funded through Transport for London, and also delivering cycle training to lorry drivers. And we must have done thousands of lorry drivers over the years, getting them onto bicycles to show them what it actually feels like to be a cyclist on the roads. Yeah, so that's kind of what I do. Is sustainable travel.
Fantastic. So a bit about you personally as well. So you have family abroad. I don't know how long you've lived in the UK actually, but you're originally from South Africa.
Yeah, well, actually, I am very originally from Hertfordshire. I was very originally born in Hitchin. And when I was two and my baby sister was 3 months old, our parents moved to South Africa because my mother was Ugandan. She was born and brought up in Kampala. And so, you know, my dad had wanted to get out of the UK for years. He was born during the war or just before the war. And I think it was a very different generation. It was the beginning of the 1970s. We got on to the last passenger ship to sail from Southampton to Cape Town. It took us 3 weeks. I mean, I cannot imagine what it must have been like for my mother with a toddler. She had me on a lead and a 3 months old. Just extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. Arrived in Cape Town and then we made our way up to Johannesburg. So a little bit like the great trek of the Boers in the olden days. Made our way up to Johannesburg and our father got a job with IBM. And we stayed in South Africa for most of my childhood, went to Italy for 3 years, back to South Africa, and then on to the US. So I came here from the US in my early 20s, and that was 3 decades ago.
Gosh, and so did you choose to come back to the UK then? And how much of your family is still in South Africa?
My sister's in South Africa and she has, you know, 3 children, husband and all the rest of it. And my father moved back. So my parents moved back to South Africa when my mother was very ill with cancer. And she decided that actually she wanted to die in Africa because, you know, you can take the girl out of Africa, but you can't take Africa out of the girl. And she was very much African. A lover of Africa. So they went back to Johannesburg in 2013. She died in 2016. And my dad stayed because my sister lives in Johannesburg. My dad actually remarried, which was wonderful, married an old friend of my mother's, and that gave him a real new lease of life. And they were very happy for about 5 years. And then he died a couple of months, well, he died 6 weeks ago, actually. So, yeah, so they're still there. I moved here because I was an anti-apartheid supporter. So I've always been anti-establishment. and I was politicised at the age of 9 during the Soweto riots. And there was absolutely no way. I couldn't stay in the US because American immigration is what it is. And I couldn't get into an American university like Boston University or anything like that. We lived in Massachusetts in Boston. And I couldn't get into an American university because I was a white South African. Despite being an anti-apartheid white South African, that was irrelevant, but I was a white South African. So I just kind of thought, well, where am I going to go? I was a journalist. There was no way I could live safely as a journalist in South Africa in those days. And, you know, the old regime used to go after your family. And so I moved to the UK thinking I was English, finding out when I moved here that actually I wasn't English at all. And I had to kind of really relearn the culture.
I'm so sorry to hear about your dad. And actually, that is what has prompted this podcast episode, because a few weeks ago, there was a conversation that I picked up on social media, which was people talking about flying to see family. There are many reasons why we might have to fly, in inverted commas, or maybe not in inverted commas, you know. We all make these decisions, the decisions that are right for us. But I was really struck because you responded to somebody and you said, my father died recently and I chose not to go to his funeral. You said that I need to focus on my son. And I found that so powerful and really moving. I mean, this is so heart-wrenching and, yeah, very moving. So can you delve into that a little bit for us and just sort of explain? And I mean, I'm sure there are so many things to explain and to explore there, but yeah, that's a really big decision not to go to your own father's funeral.
Yeah. So, well, actually, my dad didn't want a funeral, so he didn't have a funeral. And my dad and I, you know, in many ways were very, very similar. And in many ways, we were very, very different. So we were both headstrong. We used to argue politically constantly, used to drive absolutely everybody completely crazy. He brought us up as an international family. So from the get-go, we were traveling because he was born just before the war, grew up in the war, lived under rationing until he was 17 years old. I mean, that was what our parents' generation lived through. And frankly, as soon as he could travel internationally, he was off, you know? And so were his brothers and sisters. He had four brothers and sisters. And apart from one who had Down syndrome, they all traveled. They all had international careers, international lives, international families. I think that was probably sort of quite common for that generation. So he brought us up on aeroplanes or ships, traveling around the world. And he also brought us up in very fast cars. So I grew up traveling at an average of 230 kilometers an hour as a passenger on the road. I knew what kind of it felt like. I knew what it felt like to be at 210 kilometers an hour, 200, 190, 180. Yeah, I mean, I knew exactly what those speeds felt like. And that was very normal for us. Yeah, and it was just, he was a red meat eater. He was a big drinker. He was a big smoker. I mean, he lived life, you know, he loved life. He was gregarious, outgoing. And in many ways, kind of, I'm like that as well, but the complete opposite. And I think partly it was a rebellion. I thought this is just totally insane. I mean, anything could have gone wrong on the roads and he'd have wiped his entire family out. And fairly often we used to be screeching down lines of traffic on the wrong side of the road and he'd slam the brakes on and pull in front of us. I mean, really just totally insane stuff. Absolutely insane, wild living. And I think part of it was actually a rebellion against it. And sort of as it grew out of that, it grew into recognizing that really it is an unhealthy way of living on many, many levels. You know, it's exciting and it's fast, but it's not great for your mental health. It's not great for your physical health. And it's not great climatically. So in 2007, when my son was five, I decided actually that I just wasn't going to fly any longer. My parents were living in the US at the time. It was it was really important to travel, actually, to either travel to South Africa or travel to the US to see family. And so I was doing it very regularly. I was often on flights going here and there and everywhere just to kind of basically keep up with family, because that was very important, and very important for my son to know his grandparents. And, you know, and his other grandparents live in South Africa and Cape Town. So, you know, there was a lot of kind of traveling. 2007, I just decided, forget it. This is, it's just ridiculous. For one thing, it's so complicated going through US customs. We had green cards, but we weren't living there. We had no intention of moving to the US. So they were pretty hostile and difficult. So we kind of decided, well, I decided that was it, no more flying. And actually, I haven't flown since then, apart from my mum. And I flew twice for my mum, one in 2014 when she was very ill. She then moved back, flew back here in 2015. And then I flew out for her death in 2016 and her funeral. So it was quite a sort of difficult, very difficult decision, and interesting decision as to why I wouldn't do it for my dad. And it wasn't because there was any bad blood between my dad and I. It wasn't because there was any fallout between my dad and I. We kind of said our goodbyes when he was here last. And he was here last when we shared our 80th and 50th birthdays together. And we sort of said our goodbyes then. And we kept in touch by social media. And that was kind of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a personal choice, isn't it? And it's a very difficult choice, as you've outlined. And others might make a different choice. Of course, we all have to make the choice that's right for us. But having said that, we are increasingly hearing from people who are making these really difficult choices in the same way as you are. You know, people who have got family across oceans and are choosing not to go, even at those really difficult times. And I wonder if that's because, in terms of the climate, things are so bad now. We've got to that point where it's like, we have to do things. As you expressed in that statement that you wrote on social media, I prioritize my son. How do you feel about that decision that you've made? You know, you are prioritizing the future of your family, and that's what you've decided.
Yeah, and that's how I felt in many instances. So when was it? 2012, I think. My son was 10. And I decided to get rid of our car. And we have a garage at the end of our road. You know, we live in central London. And the guy who owned the garage said to me, I could sell it for you and get you £1,000. I was absolutely desperate. I mean, you know, as a cycling instructor, that you don't earn a lot of money. And things were really, really tight for me. And I just decided, I don't want to be part of this economy any longer. I don't want this to be part of my son's world any longer, because it's doing so much damage to our generation and to their generation. And actually, I would like his generation to live, to have the opportunity to live lives that have been as full as the lives that we've lived, and to live lives that have actually been as full as the lives of his grandparents have lived. And so that was kind of a turning point, and starting to frame it around wanting actually a better world for my son's generation. And, you know, I suppose traditionally when we think, you know, for instance, when my father thought he wanted a better world for his children, a better life for his children, in his view, a better life for his children was to show them the world and to give them an education and to give them opportunities where they could go out and earn enough money so that they could carry on that life and presumably show their children even more of the world. And actually, when it got to their grandchildren, it was like, you know, we can't keep on doing this because we're just going to fry our children. And so that was kind of the beginning of that thought process around then, and it's just sort of grown from there.
Well, good for you. What an incredible stance to take, and really, really powerful. So you kind of hinted at the practicalities of how you would maintain relationships, because, of course, you want to maintain those relationships with your family. So you sort of hinted at staying in touch by social media with your dad. What is it like when you're separated from your family by so many miles? How do you stay in touch?
Yeah, it is difficult. And it does splinter families. You know, not seeing your close relations splinters families. So I have got 5 nephews and nieces. I've seen one this past month, as she's been here and she spent 2 weeks with me. She flew over from South Africa. But I haven't seen her brothers since 2014, when I was out in South Africa last, when my son and I were out in South Africa last. And I haven't seen my brother's children since they were little children. And they are now 21 and 19. And I haven't seen them since 2007.
But you've seen them on screen? You've seen them in emails? How do you keep yes. that connection?
Yes, occasionally. And, you know, when my brother and I converse a lot on WhatsApp, because, of course, you know, my sister and brother and I have a WhatsApp group, like lots of families have WhatsApp groups. So we keep in touch that way, keep in touch via our other sort of social media channels. But I think for young people, when you don't know the elders in your family, you don't know them. So unfortunately, the cousins don't know each other very well at all. You know, and I grew up in an international family, so I had lots of cousins in Australia, cousins here in the UK, cousins in Hong Kong, but we knew each other better because we would see each other every couple of years because we'd just fly the globe. So there are sacrifices, there are real sacrifices, and I think you have to figure out a way that you're going to carve a life out.
So, and how do your family members feel about this? So if they're going to see you in person, I take it they would fly. And yeah, how do they feel about your decision not to travel to South Africa? I mean, I imagine that boat doesn't still go.
Well, you can get a cargo ship. So I am looking into potentially taking cargo ship trips, and they're quite interesting. The last time I looked, to get to South Africa, I mean, it's exactly the same route that it would be that I took when I was 2. Exactly the same route via the Canaries and West Africa and down the west coast of Africa. 3 weeks, which is exactly the same amount of time that it would have taken then. And it's about 4 to 4.5 grand. And when you think about it, 4 to 4.5 grand for a 21-day trip, actually, yeah, well, it's 8 grand return, come to think of it. So it's a lot of dough. It's 8 times the amount that it costs you to fly. But then again, you're spending 42 days on a cargo ship. You have dinner every evening with the captain. Presumably you eat fairly well. You have a cabin to yourself and you can carry whatever. You can carry the contents of your entire house on a cargo ship if you want to. It's pretty amazing. So, I mean, I don't know whether that's answering the question at all. I don't know whether you want to re-ask the question. I've missed it.
No, well, I mean, it's just, that's part of it, yeah.
Them coming here, isn't it?
Yes, quite. And also, yeah. Do they mind? You know, what do yes. they think about your position?
Yeah. They've always thought that I've been on the edge of sanity, I think. My family. And also, you know, my old school friends and growing up in kind of apartheid South Africa, they always thought I was completely loopy. I think they possibly think I'm slightly less loopy now because the evidence bears me out. Things aren't looking good climatically. But I do still think they, you know, they feel, God, it's such hard work. I mean, my mother used to say all the time, why don't you just take the easy route, Philippa? Seriously. And it is hard. And it does hold you back. And I think they probably feel very much the same, particularly my brother, who flies much more than my sister. Kind of like, come on, it's not that difficult. I mean, literally catching a plane is like catching a bus now. It's easier than catching a bus in many countries. You turn up at the airport, it's cheap, you can go anywhere. Not very comfortable, but you can do it.
I'm sure that there are maybe even some people listening to this, but certainly people who are kind of in our wider audience who would say the same as your mother. Yeah. Why do you have to make it so difficult? Do you have an answer to that? You know, we have to be honest, that of course it's a sacrifice. Of course it is. But what would you say to somebody, or what do you say to somebody who sort of challenges that?
Yeah, I have godparents who live in the Middle East, and my godfather turned 90 last year, and they invited me to go and spend the 90th there. It was a whole great big celebration because he's an amazing man. He's done amazing things and continues to do amazing things. And I said no. And it was, everything was paid for. It was going to be put up in the hotel, you know, lots of travel, lots of wonderful food, days of partying, seeing all sorts of really amazing people. And they have been so supportive of me at really difficult junctures in my life. And it was a very difficult thing to say, because of course I could have jumped on a plane and got there in 4 or 5 hours. So it was very difficult to say no. But they're over in London at the moment. And unfortunately, my godfather wasn't very well. So my godmother took me out for supper. And it was actually rather nice just being with her and just kind of talking about everything and nothing in the way that I think, you know, quite often one can do with, you know, with sort of mums and godmums and things like that. And she actually didn't fly for it for 50 years until she was 80 and cargo ships could no longer take her because of insurance. And I explained that, you know, I did look for a cargo ship to go over, but the lines aren't going to the Middle East. They cut passengers due to COVID. And they hadn't, by 2022, they hadn't yet reopened passenger opportunities on cargo ships to go over. And it was lovely to be able to explain that. She was very non-judgmental, but I know it was a difficult refusal from me. And I did explain at the time why. But I know that had they not been the very lovely people that they are, they could have got offended. And that's difficult, because it would be so easy just to say, just this once. I think people call them love miles. Just this once. Let's just do this because of what these people have done for you for the many decades. They've known you since you were a fetus, you know. So things go back a very, very long way. And yeah, those kind of things are difficult, and they're very personal as well.
Yeah, and I admire you so much for saying no, even though you're right. These are commonly called love miles for a good reason. And I think it's very difficult for us, isn't it, to be so straight down the line and so determined about this stuff when we do see those close to us who fly a lot, perhaps. And it's easy for others to say, well, what you're doing doesn't actually make a difference, you know, just this once sort of thing, just get on the plane.
I mean, just on that, if I may, I did slightly battle with the fact that in 2014 and 2016, I went to see my mum in Joburg and took my son. And that was, between us, 40 hours of flying per trip, because it's 10 hours to get out there, 10 hours to get back, two people, you know. So that's 80 hours over two trips. What was it about my dad that I wasn't going to show those love miles? And actually, it was nothing about my dad at all, because, of course, I loved him as much as I loved my mum. But I just thought, you know, what am I going out there for? At some point in your life, you have to make the choice between the generation that is passing and the generation that's coming in.
Wow, such a great way to put it. And yeah, really powerful. So let's finish on a positive and think about what a flight-free life looks like. You know, what are the opportunities that you've had? What kind of travels have you done? What connections have you made? Have there been experiences that you've had from having not been on a plane for so long? And how does your son feel about that?
So my son makes his own mind up. You know, he's 20, and he does fly, not very often. But he goes out to see his grandparents in South Africa. And I think it's his decision, and it's fine. And I think it's very important to keep family coherence and family unity. So that's absolutely fine. It is an interesting, because again, I would love to see the world, not on an aeroplane. And what I have done since 2007 is traveled around Britain, So I haven't ventured onto the European continent yet as a non-flyer, and I look forward to doing that. But I have done a lot of British travel. And, you know, we live in an extraordinary three countries on this island. Every single one of them is distinctly different in its identity. We've just come back from a week in Scotland, the Scottish borders. And, you know, you cycle over into England between sort of Coldstream and Berwick-upon-Tweed. Very different feel on the roads, very different towns. It's just amazing. And I think I found sort of traveling around the UK, most of it, well, all of it really by public transport. We did the Outer Hebrides 3 summers ago. Actually, it was 5 summers ago. I can't believe it. And we did the whole thing by public transport. So we got up to Scotland by train. We then went up to Oban by another train. We then caught a ferry over to Barra. And then we were going to walk the Outer Hebrides, but we decided actually with our backpacks that that wasn't such a great idea. So we caught buses, and the buses in the Outer Hebrides are minivans. You get to know the drivers, who are all local. You get to know the issues. You get to know the individuals that they pick up. So not necessarily any bus stops en route, just somebody putting their hand out and getting picked up. And, you know, you get to see into their lives in a way that you wouldn't do driving, and also wouldn't really have done cycling. You know, although I love cycling and cycle touring, you know, you go into Wales, and that again is a very different sort of country with a different feel. And then even within England, you know, you go to a town in England or a city in England and you think, oh, well, I'll go and spend a weekend there and I'll come away and I can say I've been to that place in England. But you go there and you realise very quickly that actually there are thousands of years of history alone in that little part of England with its different way of speaking English, with the different foods that people eat, with the different houses that they live in, with, you know, the different way that people see life, and yet the commonality as well between us, and the way that, you know, yes, we may speak the language slightly differently, but, you know, with a different dialect, but it's kind of the same language. And it's wonderful, actually. It is wonderful. And then, you know, you just, the charming wildlife that we have in this country, it's just lovely. It's so sweet. And the greenery. And, you know, when you get up to Scotland, the fabulously clean water. And there's so much to see and so much to do. And you can talk to anybody. People generally are so friendly and warm. And, you know, welcoming in a very British way.
I think that's summed it up perfectly, hasn't it? That's definitely finishing on a positive.
Yeah.
And fully agree with you on a personal level and also on a campaigning level from the point of view of Flight Free UK. It's not all about taking trains to European cities. It is about exploring what we have right here. There is a lifetime of adventure to be had in the British Isles. So, yeah, thanks for reminding us of that. And thank you for being so passionate and steadfast. And I know that you do so much other campaigning, so not just within your day job, really trying to achieve that modal shift of bringing low carbon transport to be the norm and the obvious choice for lots of people, but also with more outward looking campaigning and activism. So thank you for everything that you do, and keep it up, keep going.
Well, likewise, Anna. And you know, I actually do talk to quite a lot of people about Flight Free UK, because I think it's so important. I think this campaign that you run is so important. And it's been really exciting to watch it over the years and to have joined it a number of years ago. And I hope that, you know, one or two people that I've spoken to over the years have signed up and pledged to go Flight Free for a year.
Thank you. Yeah, well, that's what we hope. And that's the way to do it, isn't it? To have those conversations with those around us and spread the inspiration and hope that people then take that on and make those changes in their own lives. So thank you. And to the listener, we hope that you have also enjoyed Philippa's story and you are also inspired to continue talking to those around you and to expand the movement of flight free activism, flight free travel, and all those things for the preservation of our wonderful planet and, of course, for the next generation. So thank you for listening to this month's episode. We'll see you again next month. But for now, stay safe, stay grounded, and goodbye.
Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by the team at Flight Free UK. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to join the Flight Free Challenge for 2023. All you need to know for your challenge is at flightfree.co.uk. The Flight Free Podcast will return!